Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Ukrainian authorities are stepping up evacuation efforts along the Dnipro River as floodwaters from the explosion that ripped apart the Nova Kakhovka Dam surged downriver. Kyiv said 17,000 people were being evacuated, with 40,000 more in danger of being flooded. Another 25,000 civilians need to be evacuated from the Russian-occupied side of the Dnipro. Ukraine's President Zelensky has blamed Russian terrorists for the largest human-made environmental disaster in Europe in decades. Moscow said Kyiv had shelled the dam itself to facilitate troop movements. Well, we'll speak with Patrick Bury, Senior Lecturer in Security at the University of Bath, in just a moment. But first, UNICEF is providing assistance as part of a larger humanitarian response, and their representative in Ukraine is Damian Rance. I spoke to him a little earlier, and I first asked him how many towns and villages have been affected.
So on the Ukrainian government-controlled areas, the authorities have asked for 16 to 17,000 people to be relocated. And to my knowledge, that's 37 to 40 towns and villages or thereabouts, and possibly more than that, including, of course, significant parts of Kherson, a major city downstream from the dam.
Is the river still rising at this point, or what is the situation?
So in Kherson town, for example, Kherson city, the river is still rising. As I said, it's 50 miles downstream from the dam, and that river level will likely continue to rise for some time yet. Actually, the river levels, obviously, at the reservoir are falling significantly, which has its own issues as well in terms of water supply to many of the towns and cities that took their water from there. Kryvyi, a large city, for example, up to 500,000 people may be affected in terms of, you know, water supplies that are cut because of that reservoir being drained. But in Kherson, for example, the water level is still rising, and there are still reports of people being trapped in their houses or on the roof of their house waiting for evacuation and rescue.
And are rescue teams able to get to people at this point?
So the Ukrainian authorities, civil defense services are undertaking rescue efforts and evacuation, significant numbers of those across Kherson city and in many other small villages and towns along that stretch of river. UNICEF has teams of people, mobile teams and static teams, both in transit centers, relocation points, and transit hubs, bus stations and train stations, to ensure that when people are rescued or evacuated, they are able to receive assistance on the move.
This is an area, of course, that has been the centre of fierce fighting, and no doubt there are mines that have been planted throughout the area. Would there be concerns about the floodwater now dislodging those mines?
I mean, that's a significant concern, of course. Mine risk education is something that we that we deliver to children. We assist the government in the delivery of mine risk education, what we call explosive ordnance risk education, because of that threat. And obviously with the flood waters shifting and moving things, of course, and no one knows where they may be moved to, that threat significantly increases. So that's definitely a concern.
Is the shooting still going on?
There absolutely is. I was talking to a young boy this morning, a 14-year-old boy in Kherson, and he was telling me last night he was both concerned about the flood level, the flood levels rising, and also he could hear shooting very close by. He was rescued later on that morning, this morning. And I was speaking to another lady yesterday, Yevhenia. She has go bags already prepared in case shelling or shooting got too close to the house, so she and her three children could evacuate quickly if needed. She said when she heard news of the dam being damaged and the flooding occurring, her heart just sank. She said it was like being at the beginning of the conflict all over again and not knowing what's going to come next. So her quick run bags for shelling and shooting very quickly became quick run bags to use in the case of flooding. So it's a very volatile area, Kherson. And people are always, making sure that they are adequately prepared for such situations.
So difficult for people who've already been through so much in the area, and of course now with this flood comes risks to proper sanitation, a very basic and dangerous risk.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, the flood water obviously poses a grave risk in and of itself, but it causes further displacement for children who have already been through so much. But it does also impact their access to safe water and electricity as well. And we are currently working with the government of Ukraine to develop both short-term, immediate responses to some of these, you know, damages that have occurred to water networks, and also longer-term solutions to ensure that water and also wastewater infrastructure is managed and is able to be operational. Because the last thing we need to see right now is the spread of waterborne diseases, acute watery diarrhea and such, and also for that matter, managing any vector-borne diseases like malaria in case there's mosquito outbreaks following the rise of the flood water. So there are still significant concerns. We are working with the government now to ensure that we best manage many of these, particularly the water and sanitation issues.
And of course, that's the Ukrainian government that you're talking about working with. But there's also, I believe, another 25 civilians who need to be evacuated from the Russian-occupied side of the Dnipro River. You have no access there.
So, yeah, I mean, in non-government controlled areas, areas controlled by Russia, up to 25,000, actually, people who are potentially displaced. We don't know what their needs are or where they may have been evacuated to. We're unable to confirm any of this information. We are unable to operate in non-government controlled areas. So we don't really have any clear information, but we are certain, however, that civilians in those areas do have significant humanitarian needs as well.
Just finally then, Damien, what are the biggest risks, or what is the biggest risk that you see at this point? What's the most urgent thing that needs to be dealt with?
Well, so the most urgent thing, obviously, is people that are in flood areas and flood zones are evacuated, and that people do have a logical and methodical way of being able to evacuate in an orderly manner, that charter trains have been put on and regular bus services taking them onward. And as I said, we do have medical professionals, psychologists at these transit locations, just to assist and assure people. For example, in the Kherson train station, we even have a center for children to play with their peers, with other children, to help de-stress in what's otherwise a very stressful and traumatic time. Potentially multiple displacements have taken place for those families. And so we're making sure that their immediate needs are met. But in the long term, I think one of the most significant issues is going to be water supply. Now, in terms of immediate needs, of course, we also ensure that when people are on the move, those people with children are able to have cash as well. So that's one of the humanitarian tools that we provide. People have had to leave documents at home. They can only take documents with them. They've had to leave everything else at home to help ensure that they can settle and that they are available to purchase essential supplies. UNICEF's also providing cash. 3,500 people this morning had transfers in their accounts to help them along the way. Those are the most critical short-term needs.
Okay, and just one more final question, if you will. We saw last winter a targeting of electricity lines. Now, we don't know at this point who exactly is responsible for the targeting of the dam, but would you be concerned that this is the beginning of another attack or set of attacks on infrastructure?
Well, let's hope that's not the case. But as you say, unfortunately, yes, this is yet another attack on infrastructure that's absolutely vital to the well-being of children. The rules of war are clear. Children and essential civilian infrastructure that they rely on to survive, they must be protected. And clearly that hasn't been the case here. So, as long as we make sure that we're assisting as best we can in those locations for those immediate humanitarian needs, and also putting plans in place with the government for some of those longer term issues is all we can do now that that's occurred. As I said, I think in the long term, making sure that people, those wastewater and water infrastructure damages have been repaired, so those facilities are operational again, it's okay. Critical.
And that was UNICEF Ukraine spokesperson Damian Rance speaking to me a little earlier on. We're joined now by Patrick Puri, Senior Lecturer in Security at the University of Bath. And you're welcome, Patrick, to the programme. As we can see, still a blame game going on. President Zelensky blaming what he called Russian terrorists for the largest human-made environmental disaster in Europe in decades. He said the explosives had been detonated inside the hydroelectric station, which is under Russian control, to impede what is expected, this looming counter-offensive. And meanwhile, Moscow then saying Kiev had shelled the dam itself to facilitate troop movements. Who would you believe at this point?
I would certainly think it's highly unlikely that Ukraine blew up this dam, and I would, you know, eat my hat if it's the case. With other things like the Nord Stream last year, you know, you've got to obviously play what is in front of you in terms of the evidence. But it just seems, if you take into account that the absolute scale of the damage that we've just heard Damian describe, the amount of focus and resource that's going to require of the Ukrainian government, the drain on their already stretched resources as well, it just seems unfathomable that they would do that. What I also know is that the dam itself was in control of the Russians, and further up, which is very important to the reservoir behind the dam, the sluice gates were in control of the Russians on the eastern side. And they'd basically be trying different things. So they'd opened the sluice gates and emptied the reservoir last year to actually create, you know, harsh conditions and a bit of a water shortages in villages, etc., to drain the water away from the reservoir. So it went down to its lowest levels, and then they closed them and let the reservoir behind it go up to the highest ever levels. And this is on a dam that actually had seen fighting. There had been an explosion back there in November. And essentially, they put it either by, you know, willful neglect, they put that structure under a lot of pressure. I would definitely side with Zelensky there. I think, having looked at the pictures, the early pictures of the damage around the dam, there was no sign of blasts and twisted metal, etc., at the top. But that does not at all rule out a explosive laden down in the inside of the dam, which then, of course, with that amount of water behind it, forces a structural failure and, you know, quite neatly washes away the evidence. So I'd be much more likely that this is the Russians.
So if it was the Russians, the speculation is that their motivation for doing that would have been to slow potentially the counteroffensive, the Ukrainian counteroffensive that we've been waiting for and waiting for. And I've discussed it with you over the last couple of months on this programme. Do you think if that was the motivation, will it be successful?
I think it was happening. I think the counteroffensive had shifted just in the last few days. We saw the attacks near Novodonetsk and also near Bakhmut. The Bakhmut one is still ongoing, as I understand. And essentially, it had shifted from shaping operations to actually probing with land forces, and they were getting some success. I think the Russians are increasingly worried about the flank around Kherson and potential danger to Crimea from there. And so this would have been on the cards for a long time, been mined for a long time, we think. And, you know, unfortunately, and I totally agree with what Damien said about children and civilian infrastructure, etc., but dams are a target in wars. We've seen it in the Second World War, numerous sides targeting dams. Flood defences is a very common way of trying to deny territory to your enemy, because you know that if you do that, it basically closes off a flank to them. So I think that's what's happened here. And I think it will complicate things for the Ukrainians in the short term, at least. You can see the amount of bandwidth that's going to suck up by the government while they're trying to also, you know, obviously it's more the military side, but trying to deal with this probing offensives in the east. And I think in terms of psychologically, and also just as I said, in terms of the resource that goes into it, it's a big enough distraction. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of a momentum drop for a few days, actually, in the military sphere. But then I'd say they'll pick it back up.
Well, and that was going to be my final question. Will they be able to pick it back up? Because time is sort of running short now, isn't it? This counteroffensive needs to get underway before we start heading back into another winter.
Well, the Ukrainians have, you know, the time isn't on their side because of the way politics are. The Western support, the primaries coming up in the US, you don't know who's going to be in charge next year, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there was certainly enough time for the Ukrainians. I was more negative about their prospects for a breakthrough, you know, in March. But I think looking at just the poor quality, the leadership, the training, morale of the Russians, and then the high quality generally on the Ukrainian side, I'm confident that somewhere along the line they will be able to break through the lines. And it may take a few days or weeks of working out exactly where, but they'll do it. And then of course it's about what scale will this be? Could it be like another Kharkiv? Would it be more like a Kherson and a bit of a grind and not so big? We'll just have to wait and see. But I think there's enough time, to come back to your question, probably for one major attack followed by another one towards early autumn. So potentially two major attacks if it goes well for them.
We'll wait and see. Thank you very much for joining us with your analysis. That's Patrick Bury, Senior Lecturer in Security at the University of Bath.